thank everyone for being here today and welcome you to the Second Court of Appeals. Our panel today, to my left, is Justice Lee Gabriel. To my right is Justice Bill Meyer.
Hello.
And I'm Chief Justice Bonnie Sutterth. We have one case that's going to be argued orally today, and I understand that everyone has checked in. So if the clerk will call the case. Thank you.
The court will now call Land Tech Incorporated versus Hamilton Tech. May it please the court. Mr. Byron K. Henry will argue for the appellant. Ms. Catherine Eldridge will argue for the appellee.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Byron Henry. It's my counsel, Andrea Baressa, and together we represent the appellant, Land Tech Communications, in this appeal. I believe this appeal should be resolved by applying one of the most oft-cited maxims in Texas law, and that is, once the court ascertains the meaning of unambiguous language in an agreement, its work is done, and there's nothing else for the court to do. In addressing that issue as well as others, I'd like to talk about three things today. First of all, I'd like to talk about the trial court's order on the cross motions for summary judgment dealing with the language of the agreement that we're here on. I'd also like to briefly talk about the attorney's fees issue as well as the cross appeal on the fraud claims. With respect to the cross motions for summary judgment, I believe, was improper in this case, Your Honors, because the contract at issue unambiguously provides that Mr. Peck, the appellee in this case, is entitled to recover 10% of the initial contract price, excluding all change orders. And I believe that when you read the contract, all of its text, not just the one clause in isolation, but the entire agreement with its references, it's clear that in order for all of the provisions to make sense, as well as each one of the clauses in the recovery clause that we're talking about today in Section 2 to have meaning, that the initial contract price excluding all change orders has to be interpreted both literally and according to its plain language. There's been a few arguments against the plain language of that provision. Specifically, we'll start with the argument that somehow the initial contract price that includes the parenthetical, including all base contracts for the scope of work, actually means the guaranteed maximum price. All of the parties were aware of the term GMP, or guaranteed maximum price, at the time this contract or this agreement was negotiated. They did not choose to have recovery tied to 10% of the guaranteed maximum price, which is the potential total amount that Land Tech could have been awarded and received contracts for under this agreement. Instead,
was the work and the change order included in the scope of work covered in phase 3A through 3C on the bid documents?
On the bid documents, yes, Your Honor. The work on the change order was work that was proposed in phase 3 and part of the initial proposed scope of work for all of phase 3. That is correct. Unfortunately, the change order language does not admit of an exclusion which says change orders outside the scope of work. In that case, your honors would have to basically add language. There's no dispute here today that it is a change order, even if it is not a change order by the definition that the appellee would like to apply. I mean, it's entitled change order.
Well, is the term change order a term that is commonly understood by folks who are not in the construction industry? Do you contend that it's just everybody knows what a change order is? It has no specialized meaning in this context?
I believe that change order has a meaning, and it's a term that's used in the construction industry. Not everyone understands it, Your Honor, but it's defined in the documents that appellee says are integrated into the contract at the third volume of the clerk's record, page 1260. So,
and just because you call something a change order doesn't make it a change order, does it?
Well, I mean, I would argue
you could have called the subcontract that was entered into in September of 2015 a change order and just looped Peck out of the whole thing, right?
I mean, It is possible, the problem with that is that you would not be arguing a change to any contract. So then you would have a very odd situation where you'd be arguing that an initial contract
was a change order. Well, how did the change order change the contract?
Well, there was a $402,155 award.
Just in payment?
No, I mean, well, under that...
Work was in the original bid contract.
In the original bid, but what the first subcontract, which is all we're talking about here, the first subcontract awarded a portion of the work, or actually authorized a portion of the work for a certain portion of money. That's it. Now, to say that that is simply a release of money with the change order would be to say that all of the work was obligated to be performed by Land Tech under the first subcontract and all of the money was due under the first subcontract, and all you're doing is basically apportioning it out like an authorization of a release when you have a general contractor holding funds or a bank holding funds. That's not the case. No one disputes here today that if the change order wasn't issued, the only work that could have been completed on this project was the work identified in the Early Start Enabling, and the only money Land Tech was entitled to was the $402,000. To hold otherwise would be that as soon as the initial subcontract was awarded, Mr. Peck was entitled to all of his money, despite the fact that Land Tech wasn't authorized to do the work and wasn't authorized to be paid. No one had to pay. So the other argument, I mean, the other clear implication is that they didn't issue a letter saying we're going to release additional money. Now you're allowed to do additional work under an already existing contract. They issued a document entitled change order, which says itself there was an original contract, and the change order itself says new contract. It is signed by both parties, which means it's a new agreement. It's not a unilateral one side saying now do some work and we'll give you the rest of the money you're owed. It is a new agreement, which is part of the definition in the documents for change order. It also changes the length of the schedule, which is part of the definition. Part of the definition of change order in the documents is if it changes the schedule, changes the completion time. The actual change order changes the price, the work to be performed, the scheduled completion date, and the length of the project. And it's signed and executed by both parties, meaning it is a new contract or new agreement. If the initial subcontract would have awarded all the work and obligated Manhattan to pay $9 million to Land Tech, not only would you not need that change order, you certainly wouldn't need it signed, you wouldn't need to alter the completion date, you wouldn't need to change the price, and you wouldn't need to refer back to an original contract. So the idea that it's not a change order the way their witness says change orders usually, the way change orders usually work, doesn't change the definition in the documents and doesn't change the fact that it was a new agreement for additional work for additional payment, changing the labor, the materials. Now, it didn't change the labor and materials that were in the bid. I mean, clearly the bid had everything needed to complete the whole project, just like any bid. But until the change order issued, nothing could happen past the $402,000 worth of work that was authorized and the $402,000 payment that was obligated to be made. Any other interpretation, at least the way I've seen it looking at this, is that would mean that you'd have to say that Land Tech received the entire contract by this initial subcontract, and had they decided not to issue the change order, Land Tech could have still sued Manhattan for the entire deal. Because the first subcontract was actually, according to Appley, the first subcontract was really for the whole deal, for the guaranteed maximum price. They just decided for convenience sake to portion it out by way of a little up front and then a change order. The problem with that is Land Tech had absolutely no right to a dollar more than $402,000, $155, until that change order was issued. The schedule changed, as I said before, and so it's a change order as used in this deal under these documents, even if there's 100 other deals in trade usage where it would not have been considered a change order.
You made reference to what their witness said concerning what change order means. So that's parole evidence of what the contract means, correct?
It's parole evidence if the contract defines the term. I mean, if the contract's, I mean, the Supreme...
Did the contract define the term, did you not?
It surely did. Oh, I'm just saying it's not always, but in this case, Your Honor, absolutely, Justice Gabriel, it was parole evidence because it doesn't matter what his experience is if the term is defined in the agreement. So it would be considered parole evidence. The second problem is the
Before
party...
Before you leave this, Mr. Henry, what is your position as to what is the meaning of the words guaranteed or maximum price?
The guaranteed maximum price?
Guaranteed by this contract not to exceed $9,195,45.
That is the ceiling of which the ceiling that is holds the number, caps the number that Land Tech could make on this deal. It is the outermost ceiling, and if they get a contract for all of the work that they've proposed, they would be entitled to the $9 million number
that's referenced. All right, now what was the breakout on the phase one, phase two, phase three? Were all three phases covered in the bid document?
No, Your Honor. Phase one was a separate project that had been awarded, funded, paid, and completed before this deal. Then there
and
was
how
phase
much
two.
Was that contract price?
I don't recall right off the top of my head, Your Honor, how much the original contract price. But
all right,
it was
then
in
let's,
the
go to phase, let's go to phase two.
Phase two was in the millions, and it was a deal where they did use a change order in the same way they used it in phase three, by which part of the money was awarded up front. In that case, it was a much higher percentage up front. It was about $3.3 million up front, and then a change order was used to award the rest of the work and obligate payment. And then phase three, which is the one we're dealing with now, was a total bid project of $9 million and change, by which the initial subcontract signed by the parties was about $402,000, and then subsequently, five months later, a change order was executed by the parties by which the remainder of the work within the scope of the initial bid was added to the project, and they were obligated to pay another $8.8 million, I believe.
All change. Right. Now, what was the history of the organization of Land Tech Communications, Inc.? Was it a corporation formed in Texas for the purpose of bidding on this job?
No, it was a pre-existing company, Your Honor.
And is on 50-50 before Mr. Beck was bought out.
That's right.
And what was Mr. Peck's role in the soliciting of the business for Land Tech in the work at the DFW airport?
He had a role in phase one, two, and in proposing and not obtaining any contract for phase three. He left the company by agreement before the initial subcontract was awarded, but he was at the company when the proposal for phase three was put together.
Tell me his expertise. Was he a salesman? Was he a technician? What did he do for the company in addition to having title and being on the board and all that?
Not sure the record fully reflects for summary judgment purposes all, but I will try to answer the best as I can, including some in the record, as he was a both. He had technical expertise in construction and this area, as well as proposals and bids and making bids and obtaining work.
Is he a programmer in terms of computer work?
Don't think so.
All right.
Thank you. That, Your Honor.
Thank you for answering my questions.
You're welcome. The second issue I'd like to point out with the interpretation that this isn't really a change order is the fact that if change orders are considered contracts within the scope of work, then excluding all change orders does no work. Because if the definition of change order is only agreements or changes outside the scope of work, then the operative inclusionary clause, which is initial contract price including all base contracts within the scope of work, would exclude change orders by definition. So, but excluding all change orders needs to do some work in this case. It was added specifically after the fact. You'll probably hear about that when the appellees argue, but it was added to a draft of the agreement, and the idea that it doesn't mean anything, which it wouldn't if only things within the scope of work are covered, because only a change order that might be issued within the scope of work would be the ones excluded, because it couldn't be within the scope of work. Also, I'd like to mention briefly the recent case that I attempted to file a supplementary brief, but I just wanted to bring a case to the court's attention that I didn't cite, and it was issued by the Supreme Court of Texas on March the 23rd, 2018, and it's the URI versus Cleburne County case. It's at 2018 Westlaw 1440148. And in that case, the Supreme Court basically recites the surrounding circumstances test, which the appellee devotes about 8 pages of their brief to, on how to construe this language. And basically, the court in sum, and Your Honors, of course, can review the case, in sum says you cannot use surrounding circumstances to alter, modify, limit, or otherwise change unambiguous contract terms. It can only be used, if at all, to illuminate the terms that were actually used by the parties. And in this case, I believe that what the appellee is attempting is to basically have the court read initial out of the agreement and replace initial contract price with guaranteed maximum price, which would fit nicely with what they're asking for, as well as basically read out excluding all change orders, or instead read it to mean excluding all change orders outside, within the initial scope of work, so that you basically have a limitation on the scope of all change orders as opposed to what the contract actually says. And I believe in this case that would be improper. And certainly reviewing all the parole evidence and the extrinsic evidence is an invitation for the court to find the contract ambiguous. I see my time is up. If there are no other questions, thank you, Your Honors.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Catherine Elrich. I represent the appellee cross appellant Hamilton Peck, along with John Bowditch, trial counsel for Mr. Peck. Mr. Peck was a former vice president of business and sales at Lantech, to answer your question, Mr. Meyer, Justice Meyer, earlier. Lantech takes an unjustifiably oversimplified approach to interpreting the settlement agreement to avoid paying Mr. Peck what is due and owing to him. What Lantech is arguing is that Peck is only owed 10% of an early start enabling, which is defined as a partial funding fee in the contract of $402,155, not 10% of the initial contract price for the scope of work defined in the parties' agreement, as they agreed to in the settlement agreement. We absolutely dispute that the only work Lantech was obligated to do was the early start enabling work. Lantech was absolutely obligated to perform the entire contract. In fact, if the court turns to Exhibit A of the contract, there is language there, and it's actually all throughout the contract, but this is the one that to me is the most pertinent, that it says that the subcontractor, who is Lantech, agrees to deliver a complete project in every aspect, not just the three items in the early enabling start portion, but in every aspect.
And why was it necessary to enter into the change order?
The change order, Your Honor, we were not a part of the company when the change order was issued, and we were not a part of the company when phase two was issued that set up this type of payment structure. We don't believe that it was necessary for the change order, but there was a particular provision that said that they would release the rest of the funds, but that's all it was doing, was releasing the rest of the funds. It was not saying that you weren't obligated to perform the contract, they weren't obligated to be paid on the contract. Lantech that bases this on an incorrect understanding of the change order exclusion in the settlement agreement, which is not at all a reasonable interpretation. And we are certainly reading the language in the change order into the settlement agreement. In fact, there was a change order number two, that was issued for additional work of about $7,000. And we're not claiming that our 10% is tied to that additional work, because that change order actually added work to it. The trial court
And I had a question about that. When the trial court awarded the amount that the trial court awarded, was that $7,000 calculated into that award amount?
No, Your Honor.
It was excluding that. So that was above the guaranteed maximum payment.
Right. That was some additional work that was entered into after. And so we certainly understood what a change order meant to be, which is what the industry term is, and which also comports with the contract term, in that it is going to be a change in work. It's going to be an addition or deletion in the scope of work. And the trial court understood that, too. The trial court correctly interpreted the settlement agreement, giving effect to all the terms in the agreement and the true intent of the party. And this court should affirm the trial court's judgment for two reasons. One, the change order number one upon which LandTech relies is not really a true change order as defined by industry terms, and thus it's not excluded. And then even if the change order does meet the definition and is excluded, PEC is still entitled to 10% on the initial contract price as the settlement agreement describes. That initial contract price is $9.1 million and not the early start enabling fee or partial amount of $402,000.
Does Cooper's definition of change order comport with the contracts, the subcontracts definition of change order?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at Cooper's definition of change order, it absolutely comports with that definition. That definition in the contract says that it is covering changes in the plan, specifications, or proposal quantities. It's an actual change. It's not just a change in price. It's an actual change in the scope of work, and that's what Cooper's affidavit goes to. And it's it certainly can be relied on. It's not inadmissible parole evidence. As the URI case describes, as my opposing counsel had mentioned, the URI Inc. case that Justice Eva Guzman wrote recently for the Texas Supreme Court, it discusses that with respect to parole evidence and extrinsic evidence, you can look to that evidence for definitions for industry terms, and this change order was, in fact, an industry term. So it's very important to...
So Cooper's testimony was consistent with the terms of the contract.
Absolutely. It was consistent with the terms of the contract and can be used to understand the surrounding circumstances and understand what the parties would have understood when it entered into this this agreement and when it included that exclusion of change order, which was really meant to clarify and exclude work that Mr. Peck did not procure, additional work above and beyond what Mr. Peck did not procure. So it's very important when we're looking at these at this contract to interpret the settlement agreement. It doesn't just stand alone by itself. You have to look at both the settlement agreement and the Phase 3 subcontract agreement to get a determination of what the initial contract price means to be able to determine what to multiply that 10% by. LandTech was required by the settlement agreement to pay PEC this additional compensation of 10% of the initial contract price up to $1 million. So we look to the Phase 3 contract to see what this initial contract price means. And the settlement agreement also defines the initial contract price to include the entire scope of work in the bid documents. LandTech would have us ignore that and just look at the early start enabling work, which were three items: demolition work, BIM work, and make safe work. That's it. That's all that the early start enabling fee was to go to. But this contract was more than an early start enabling contract. It wasn't a contract that said, okay, you're required to do this enabling start work, and you may or may not be required to do the rest of the work. No, this contract was for a full $9.1 million, and it was up to LandTech to perform that. Now, the settlement agreement isn't tied to LandTech's performance, whether they were required to or not required to. My opposing counsel mentions the fact that, well, certainly LandTech wouldn't be required to pay Mr. Peck any amount if LandTech hadn't performed that. Well, the settlement agreement doesn't read that way, and we would contend that yes, LandTech was required to pay 10% of the $9.1 million, whether or not they performed that work or not. It just says so long as they're awarded the contract, and they were absolutely awarded that contract. In discussing the change order, I want to talk a little bit about the change order before I go too far into the terms of the contract and explain why we believe the change order number one was not really a change order. Just as you mentioned, you hit the nail on the head. Headings don't control here. It's a change order in name only. It is not truly a change order as Mr. Cooper testified and as defined under the terms of the contract. Additionally, there's not a new agreement entered into with respect to the change order. It did not change any of the scope of the work. The bid agreement did have everything in there, as opposing counsel did mention. There was nothing beyond the additional, beyond the scope of the work in the initial bid documents, and that's what was required by the settlement agreement. Again, even if we are looking beyond the change order, even if we go ahead and exclude that change order, we can still get that initial contract price by just looking at the Phase 3 subcontract. And it's, I want to make an important note and call the court's attention. It's important to look at the entire Phase 3 contract. I noticed last night when I was going through my materials that in appellant's brief, as part of their appendix tab A8, they include just portions of the Phase 3 contract. They don't include the entire Phase 3 contract, and it's very important that the court look at the entire agreement, because there's an Exhibit A that goes with the agreement, and it's at the third volume of the clerk's record, 1084 through 1126. Exhibit A is referenced all throughout the agreement, explaining the scope of the work, explaining all of the tasks that are to be performed, explaining all of the prices associated with each of the tasks. So I would urge this court to take a look at the clerk's record at Exhibit A to see the entire scope of work and the entire agreement. Now, the scope of work, the settlement agreement calls for payment to be based on the entire scope of work for the Phase 3 documents based on the bid documents. The Phase 3 subcontract also defines the scope of work as set forth in Exhibit A to the Phase 3 subcontract, and that also references the bid documents, too. Those are also included there, too.
If it's your position that the term excluding the any change order means any change order outside the scope of the work, and it's their position that that is not what it means, that it doesn't mean outside the scope of the work, why is this not ambiguous?
It's not ambiguous, Your Honor, because the term change order in and of itself, they can't call a dog a cat and then make the dog a cat. You don't look at the title of the document. You look at the substance of the document. And that change order number one does not reflect the true meaning of a change order. But again, even if you...
So if they use this same procedure in Phase 2 where they did the early enabling part and then did a change order, wouldn't it have been prudent to put in excluding any change order outside the scope of the work, which was based upon that previous deal?
Your Honor, Mr. Peck was not with the company, was not privy to the Phase 2 contract. And if you look at the Phase 1 contract, which is also in the record, it does not have this payment structure where it's broken out into one fee and then a change order later. It's just one And so Mr. Peck would not have had knowledge of that. And what his understanding of a change order and what he was told a change order would mean is that we're just clarifying for any additional work beyond, above and beyond what Mr. Peck's involvement was when he was here with the company. And so that certainly comports with what the industry would interpret a change order to mean. So that's why it wasn't included in there, but it's still not ambiguous, because even if you do go ahead and exclude that change order talks about an $8.8 million figure. We're talking about a $9.1 million figure. You just revert back to the original contract, and the original contract tells us what the initial contract price is based on the GMP. It's the $9.1 million, and that's the amount that is due and owing. So if the court were to find that that change order was excluded by the settlement agreement, then you just look back to the Phase 3 contract, and you can see the initial contract price there based on Exhibit A, based on as well as based on the subcontract language that they refer to, which has the 402 language, that very first Section B subcontract amount. It's on page 1086 of Volume 3 of the clerk's record. It says that the amount is $402,155 plus. It talks about additions and deductions agreed upon hereafter in writing. Well, that hereafter in writing is Exhibit A. And Exhibit A lists out a recap of the amount due and owing, the early start enabling fee, which it defines and includes as the $402,155, and then it has a guaranteed maximum price of $9.1 million. Also has a general conditions figure of 1.4, but that's also wrapped into the 9.1. You can actually literally go through and add up all of those figures, and you reach the $9.1 million. That's the initial contract price. That's what was initially agreed to in the Phase 3 contract. Now, the change order talks about an 8.8 figure, and if that's excluded, okay, that 8.8 figure is excluded. We're back to the 9.1 figure, and we've always been at the 9.1 figure. That's what we've always argued. Now, we have, I want to make sure that this is clear in the court. We've mentioned in our brief, the parties did stipulate to agree to amount of damages if the court agrees with our interpretation, and we are basing the 10% on a $5 million figure. I just want to make sure that that's clear and there's not confusion there. And the reason why we did that was because there was some subcontractor work that were paid to various subcontractors of Landtech. The parties went ahead and subtracted that out, and so we're basing the 10% off of the 9.1 minus the work that went to those subcontractors that we've detailed out in our brief, and we get to a 5.5 figure. And the parties ultimately, when they reached their stipulation for damages, because they didn't want to squabble about the amount of damages owed if the determination on the interpretation was upheld, we reached the agreement that the amount of damages would be the $547,000 less the $40,000 that had been already paid, so it's $507,000. I just want to make sure that that was clear. I want to mention that Lantech's position just has to be rejected. It's not reasonable. This is not a situation where we've got two reasonable positions and the contract's ambiguous. Lantech's position is not reasonable and must be rejected because it ignores the totality of the language and it ignores the integrated Phase 3 contract. I see that amount of time. I did not get to reach our other arguments in our brief. I will rely on our brief for those arguments. We did present a cross appeal for the fraud claims. Those are presented in the alternative should the court reverse the breach of contract claim, but we would respectfully request that the court affirm the breach of contract claim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, briefly, let's start with the first argument that Lantech has to provide all the work, despite the fact that the contract itself on page clerk's record, third volume, page 1086, clearly only obligates Manhattan to pay my client $402,000. So it's an odd result if the court were to find that we were required to do $9 million worth of work for $400,000 when that's the only money that we were entitled to. And in fact, I think the record reflects that that's their own expert's position too, is that at the very least, you have to do the change order so we get paid. So even their position isn't that we have to do all the work for $402,000. Then why would they do the change order? They can get $9 million worth of work for $400,000. That is an unreasonable position. The change order itself alters the price. If nothing else, it changes the price from $402,000, even under their argument. We were not required to do the work of $9 million for $402,000. And the only signed contract in this record before the change order has three sections of work for $402,000. That is the only enforceable obligation, which you can use legal terms to define what initial contract price. It's not a pie in the sky ceiling. It is a contract price. The only contract price in the record before the change order is $402,000 in change. That is the only.
So clearly it was contemplated that there would be additional contract language added to this original document you're talking about right now in order to properly reflect the actual scope of work to be permitted and be completed and the amount of money to be paid.
The actual contract itself says itself that they would accomplish additional work and additional payment by change order. So it says they would do another agreement signed by the parties for additional work for additional payment. In other words, a second contract, which that leads me to my second point.
Before you leave,
Justice Meyer.
So it's your position that Mr. Peck would have had the understanding from the very initial documents talking about this $400,000 payment that there was going to be additional definition of times, dates, amounts of money to be paid under the whole three-phase contract?
Their position is that Mr. Peck was not aware of the manner in which Phase 3 contract would be issued or the terms of the Phase 3 subcontract.
I didn't ask you what they contended. I asked you what you contend. And you contend that Peck didn't know that $402,000 was the only amount of money, not the only amount of money to be paid?
The only evidence in the record is that no one knew that the initial contract would come out at $402,000. In fact, the last Phase 2 came out with over $3 million in the initial plus a change order, so it was this is 5%. That one was much higher percentage.
I'm just trying to get to the logic of the understanding that Mr. Peck's here, and he's working with this company, and he's working with this contract, and he's working with his then co-owner to get all this work, scope of work defined, and how much money we're going to get paid. And at the point in time whenever the $402,000 was the only dollar amount in this three-phase contract or three-phase development project, scope of work, it's your position that he just agreed to forego the subsequent payments because those were going to come about by change order.
If he knew about it, he did so knowingly. If he didn't know about it, it's irrelevant because he agreed to what he agreed to. He agreed to no payments based on change orders. He didn't agree to any payment based on the total scope of work. It's not what it says. He agreed to initial contract price excluding all change orders. That's what he agreed to. What he knew, to me, is irrelevant. And I know it's relevant to you, and that's why I answered, Your Honor, but is irrelevant to what he agreed to. He either agreed to what the contract says or he didn't, and I think their position is he did not know how the contract would come out or he would have never agreed to this. I think that's their position. I would just also like to point out the argument that the second change order they didn't ask for because it was outside the scope of work. That was my point. It wouldn't be covered, but excluding all change orders wouldn't apply to the second change order under their definition because it was outside the scope of work, and they don't believe you can have a change order within the initial scope of work. So that doesn't render the clause meaningful. It proves the point that the clause is meaningless. And I would just like to point the court to the record. The change order that was used in this case for this change order is identical to the one that was used as subcontract change order number 2 in form, function, listings.
Well, what do you say to their contention that Peck wasn't around when Phase 2? He wouldn't have had knowledge that that's how it was structured. In fact, it was structured differently in Phase 1 when he was around. So his basis of knowledge on how these things were structured was based on Phase 1, not Phase 2.
I would say that what he knew doesn't have anything to do with the interpretation of an unambiguous agreement, and if his understanding of the way the deal was going to come down was mistaken, then it's possibly a bad deal for Mr. Peck.
So why is it important how Phase 2 is structured?
Why is it important?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's only important, as the settlement agreement says, he gets an initial contract price and excludes change orders. So
Phase 2.
Why is it important?
Why is Phase 2 structure important?
Their argument is that goes to their fraud claim. Their argument is that because we knew it's possible that a large chunk could be by change order, we had a duty to tell him before he signed the agreement excluding change orders. That goes to the fraud argument, but I don't think that goes to the argument on how to construe the language of the actual agreement, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
If there are no other questions.
I have one other question. Is it your position in reading all of this that Peck's not entitled to any money?
No, Your Honor. But our position is Peck was, and I think we started paying even during the lawsuit, he is entitled to 10% of the initial contract price, including any base contracts that come out within the scope of work, and not any change orders. Therefore, he is entitled to 10% of the $402,155.
Okay.
With that, Your Honor, we just ask that you reverse the trial
$40,000.
$40,000 and change, yes, Your Honor. We ask that the court reverse the trial court's judgment on summary judgment and render judgment for Lantec, and in the alternative, if Your Honors determine that the agreement, which you can do sua sponte, is ambiguous, then unfortunately it would require reverse and remand for further proceedings.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank counsel for oral argument today. It was very helpful. That will conclude our session, and you are now free to go about your business.